Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Why We Love Star Wars, The Great Moments That Built a Galaxy Far, Far Away by Ken Napsok. Narrated by Ken Napsok. This book is dedicated to every young child, past, present, and future, who watches Star Wars and thinks, I love this. It is also dedicated to that kid in elementary school who bullied me for wearing a Return of the Jedi t-shirt. All is forgiven. Oh, wait, one more. I also dedicate this book to Moff Tion Jer Gerard. I always felt you were unfairly blamed for the second Death Star not being completed on time. Prologue. A long enough time ago in a small coastal California town. Spring, 1983. 10 kids, all aged between 7 and 8, were in the middle of a slumber party. Laughter and horseplay were in full swing as the sugar rush from the birthday cake they had all just enjoyed had yet to give way to the sugar crash the host parents had been praying for from the first bites on. From the television emerged some now familiar sounds from a galaxy far, far away. Spaceships roared. Aliens laughed. Laser blasts exploded. It was a trailer for the next exciting chapter in the Star Wars saga, letting every kid and the adults in that room know that Return of the Jedi would be racing to theaters that May. Every single one of the kids stopped dead in their tracks. The rambunctious energy vanished in a flash. Star Wars had them. Cue the opening theme to Stranger Things? Nope. This really happened. It happened to me at my friend John's birthday. I remember the exact moment, the room lighting, the sleeping bag I was wrapped up in, and above all else, I remember seeing Luke Skywalker, Jedi Knight, and friend of Captain Solo, dressed in all black, igniting his lightsaber high atop Jabba's sail barge, the Katana. Even when you consider the slower pacing of movie trailers in the 1980s, this trailer was full to the brim of the Star Wars imagery that would one day be a daily part of my life. Yet it was this one thing, Luke Skywalker hacking and slashing with his laser sword, that pulled me in. It stayed with me, and even now I don't fully understand why Han Solo would eventually become my favorite Star Wars character. I've always found myself more interested in the inner workings of the rebellion against the Empire than in Jedi and their lore. It's not even my favorite Luke Skywalker moment. However, 7-year-old me was transfixed, beyond intrigued by the image of this hero with a blade. I'm sure there are some self-help books I can dive into as a means to explain it, and I'll let you know the results another time. What's even more entertaining now is that, in reality, the moment was actually fleeting. A quick search online will lead you to the actual trailer, and watching it will reveal that Luke is on top of that sail barge, lightsaber ignited, for less than a second. Blink and poof, it's gone. You're on to the next shot. But for years, years, I tells you, it was so burned into my brain that I was convinced Luke was there for most of the trailer, probably alongside comedian Sinbad as Shazam and the Bernstein Bears. I actually kept searching for another trailer, one with the longer, sustained shot that I knew I had seen. But it wasn't there. All that remains is the brief glimpse of a Jedi Knight, a lightsaber, and the villains between him and safety. And that, if I may, makes it all the more impressive, most impressive, because that's all it took. One brief moment. That was when Star Wars hooked me. And the great part is, I wasn't alone. This happened to you as well. This happened to your friends. It happened to your uncle and your quiet next-door neighbor. It happened to your office buddy and the kids selling you a movie ticket. It happened to all of us. Maybe it was in 1977 when your jaw dropped as an Imperial Star Destroyer flew over your head for the first time. Perhaps it was in 1997 when George Lucas decided to re-release his movies with all new additions and special effects. This could have happened to you in 1999 when a wonderful teaser trailer announced that every legend has a beginning, or maybe it was in 2015 when a more distinguished Han Solo proclaimed to his Wookiee co-pilot and us, Chewie, we're home, and ushered in a new era of Star Wars stories. We all have a moment that absolutely hooked us. While there are a lot of Star Wars moments to choose from amongst 11 theatrically released movies, for now, 2 hit animated shows, and countless books and comics, we seem to gravitate towards little moments just as much as the big themes. These moments become the very reasons we love Star Wars. the reasons we keep coming back. Yes, you could define a reason to love Star Wars as directly as it makes me happy, or it teaches you a basic morality at a young age. However, those textbook reasons jump out of the screen and off the page through these moments. The moments are the reasons we love Star Wars. Let's go back to 1983 in that Return of the Jedi trailer. An entire generation of fans soaked in every image over the course of two glorious space minutes. Amongst the X-Wings, yelping Ewoks, and exploding Death Star, I locked onto that brief image of Luke Skywalker. That was a moment. But the reason it made me love Star Wars is that in one action-packed beat among many, I gravitated to the bigger adventure at play. A gallant figure was in the throes of action, but he wasn't striking out in anger. This hero in black, lightsaber in hand, was standing proud against evil forces, standing strong between them and his friends. He was in control. It was a picture of calm strength amongst the chaos of the galaxy rolling out before us fans. It was the pose of a hero. A reason to love Star Wars emerged from that moment, and I have been fascinated with those moments ever since. It should be clearly stated, though, this is not a definitive list. It can't be, and it shouldn't be. For one, it can't even be final. Thankfully, the Star Wars saga lives on. We as a fan base thought the last of the Star Wars movies had arrived in 2005 with Revenge of the Sith. That was supposed to be it. George had completed his saga, at least in terms of the big screen, and we were left with our memories, our collectibles, and the emerging digital media scene to analyze it forever. Sure, the excellent animated television series of Clone Wars launched with an uneven theatrically released movie that led us into the show, a show that did serve as an entry point into Star Wars for many fans and gave veteran fans more stories to chew on. But, for the most part, Star Wars was all wrapped up in a warm, nostalgic 6-disc set. Yes, with more variations and additions to come, but this isn't that book. It all changed in 2012. George Lucas sold Lucasfilm to Disney, and new movies soon followed. I remain forever grateful. New Star Wars movies means a large swath of new Star Wars moments that create even more reasons to love the saga. You'll find a lot of those moments in this book, including moments from the novels, comic books, animated TV shows, and video games. At the time of this writing, we're still waiting for Episode 9, a new trilogy from Rian Johnson, live-action shows The Mandalorian and one focused on Cassian Andor, and a proposed series of movies from the showrunners of HBO's Game of Thrones. The moments presented to you here represent a snapshot of fandom now, and I guess then. As Yoda said, always in motion, the future is. Oh, do you like Star Wars quotes? Oh, good, stand by for a lot of those. And so it is with Star Wars itself. This can't be a definitive list because we're just not done consuming new Star Wars, thankfully. This also can't be a definitive list because one person is writing it. I certainly have lost nights and nights of sleep forming some kind of ranking here. I've already changed my rankings 3 times since you started to listen to this book. However, there was no specific research that built the list you're about to hear, no BuzzFeed polls to influence it, and we didn't go door to door to ask every fan what moments they wanted here. This is one fan's journey through the saga. Yet I'm not on a Scarif Island alone here. One of the great things about celebrating Star Wars is that one's fandom is both incredibly unique and wonderfully communal. You may have grown up in the American Midwest feeling like you were the only one that connected with the plight of Dak Walter and The Empire Strikes Back. But far across the globe, in Japan, England, or beyond, another fan felt the same way. Dak's words of, "I feel like I could take on the Empire myself," resonated with them as well. You got there yourself, so did they. And now you are both connected. That's comforting. You have a large group of friends who you have yet to even meet. It can even be across time itself. Star Wars now expands across several different generations and will continue to do so. Star Wars is stronger when it is passed on to the fans that are coming up behind you. What inspired one fan in 1983 will organically inspire another in 2025. So the moments that are about to roll out here started with me, but they're now yours. To be shared, discussed, and yes, quite possibly, debated. It should be known, though, that while the list found here could easily change and most definitely be added to, there is one permanent thing to be found here. Joy. I love Star Wars. I was a 1-year-old baby swaddled in my mother's arms at a drive-in movie theater in 1977. My parents watched Star Wars that night, and I certainly have no memory of that experience, but I was there. The franchise has been in my life the entire time. It hooked me in 1983, and despite a growing interest in other hobbies and pursuits, Star Wars remained strong in my heart. Baseball cards, chasing an entertainment career, romance, not even Garbage Pail Kids, yeah, Garbage Pail Kids, could pull me away from Star Wars. This does not mean that I believe everything in Star Wars is perfect, that there aren't wrinkles in the stories and characters that deserve questioning or a deeper look. This doesn't even mean that I don't think one can poke fun at Star Wars. I do, actually. That's part of being a Star Wars fan. However, above it all, I love Star Wars. Unabashedly. When Joseph Scrimshaw, Jennifer Landa, and I launched the Force Center podcast feed in 2015, it was for the sole and very specific purpose of celebrating Star Wars. And that was continuing with a theme that fueled Maude Garrett and my show Jedi Alliance in 2014. In 1983, I locked onto the image of a Jedi Knight high atop Jabba's sail barge with a lightsaber in hand. It transfixed me. It enraptured me. It inspired me. I fell in love with this silly little space saga at that moment, and I still love it. I always will. So, here now, together, you and I, let's discuss why we love Star Wars with 100 moments that built a galaxy far, far away. A final note. This is the point in the process I fear the most. You're really about to listen to this book, and before you actually take this journey with me, I just want you to know that I'm feeling really vulnerable right now. I'm not asking for sympathy, not even understanding. I'm just letting you know the truth. I'm being very honest and raw. I've wanted to write a book like this for a long time, and now it's here. You have it in your ears, and this is really happening. Deep breath. This is going to be a great experience for everyone, and apologies if I write in first person from time to time. I was a stand-up comedian for years and were just way too comfortable writing, performing, and complaining in the I, me, mine form. I just want to say a few more things while I have your attention and you've seen me at my most vulnerable. Here are technical notes on the moments that are the reasons behind why we love Star Wars. First, this is a ranking, but don't let that distract you from what you're about to hear. These certainly build on each other, and the moments listed later on do carry a little more weight, but I truly believe these reasons all add up to the greater point at hand, loving Star Wars. No one reason can exist without the other. It's like that one time Obi-Wan Kenobi told Boss Nass that the Gungans and the people of Naboo are symbiotic life forms and they need each other. Yeah, that's exactly it. This book is just like the Gungans and the people of Naboo. Thanks, Obi-Wan. Second, the moments, scenes, characters, sounds, music, and more are all based on the new canon of Star Wars, the canon that began in April 2014 when it was announced that Lucasfilm was starting over with a fresh slate of Star Wars stories beyond just the new movies coming down the pipeline. What was the vibrant and robust and often confusing and, you know, what's the word, silly, expanded universe became Star Wars Legends. This was, and still is, considered by many to be controversial and, in some extreme cases, tragic. I understand that. I respect that. I love the passion of Legends fans. However, to be clear, this book is comprised of Star Wars moments drawn from the theatrically released movies, novels, and Marvel Comics released under the new canon banner, newer shows like Star Wars Rebels, Star Wars Resistance, and Forces of Destiny, and of course, everybody's favorite animated program, The Clone Wars. While there are many things to be celebrated about Star Wars Legends, Palpatine's three-eyed son Triclops, Luke the clone, and Chewie being crushed by a moon are not among those moments, this is not that book either. Sorry. Seriously. Third, this book was written prior to the release of Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, the live-action TV show The Mandalorian, or any future film projects announced or rumored. So, if you happen to be listening to this book after those projects came out and are wondering where's that one scene in which future spoiler here, well, that's why. The best part of this is that it means a second edition of this book will have to be written. Not published. No, what I'm saying is I will most likely just scribble some new moments into the margins of this book, and if you connect with me on LinkedIn, I'll let you know what they are. Fourth, what do you think first set off the feud between the Gungans and the people of Naboo? I mean, for the most part, the Gungans lived underwater and appeared to be on the other side of the world. That's why the planet core was the quickest way from Oda Gunga to Theed, right? I kind of get the sense that the drylanders up on the planet's surface were being a little prickly in their distaste of the Gungans. I'm not absolving the Gungans of any wrongdoing. Sure, Boss Nass seems pretty affable after you put a peace orb in his hands, but prior to that, he did seem to have an argumentative streak, and Captain Tarples had no problem poking his own troops with electroprods. Yeah, but if your next-door neighbors hated you for no reason, you might aggressively poke things with electroprods as well. Regardless of how it started, I'm really glad Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan were able to get that symbiotic point across. Fifth, I am not affiliated with Lucasfilm or Disney, though I can tell you where to get the best hot chocolate in Disneyland. I am a professional broadcaster, podcaster, writer, and entertainer who has been entrenched in the professional Star Wars punditry game for a while now. I'm not a critic. I am a professional appreciator, and this is one fan's journey through a lifetime of loving Star Wars. A really, really vulnerable fan. May the Force be with you. 100. The Blockade Runner Blaster Fight. How Pew 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 Became a Playground Standard. Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. Writer, George Lucas. Director, George Lucas. If you're talking about great Star Wars moments, you'd be hard-pressed not to start where it all began, the opening moments of A New Hope. On May 25, 1977, unsuspecting movie fans settled into their seats, non-stadium reserve seating without the ability to lounge back in the chairs. How did movie fans of the ancient times ever actually enjoy the movies they waited in line hours to see and were collectively blown away by the image of the Imperial Star Destroyer Devastator flying over their heads in hot pursuit of the soon-to-be-loved Princess Leia's blockade runner, the Tanavee IV? It was a sequence that literally changed cinema, fandom, and lives. Yes, actual lives were changed that day. What a moment. A true Hall of Fame Star Wars moment. But let's talk about the moments right after that and the reason it provides to love Star Wars and one of the greatest gifts it gave fans, the sounds of blasters. Let's dive into the pew-pew-pew of it all. Sound designer Ben Burtt has as much to do with the success of the Star Wars franchise, particularly A New Hope, as anyone because he was able to create sound effect after sound effect after sound effect that stuck with you long after you left the theater. His sound design became the voice of Chewbacca, the breathing of Darth Vader, and the roar of the Millennium Falcon. Yes, the story, the characters, and the sequences that fans saw were important, but you cannot overlook the tremendous impact of the sounds you took home with you. It was unintentionally brilliant marketing. In backyards and playgrounds everywhere, Star Wars was being played out by all those new fans, whether it was with the Kenner figures, the ultimate marketing strategy, or something as simple as a stick for a lightsaber and your hands for a blaster, the sounds of Star Wars became one of the reasons you loved it. Pew, pew, pew. Now it's a meme, a beloved wink and a nod to the sounds you made as a young fan. A shared sound effect amongst fans. Pay close attention. You can even see Laura Dern as Admiral Holdo mouth pew as she fires a stun blast at Poe Dameron's mutinous cohorts in The Last Jedi. And it all began in that hallway. Many were still processing the sensory overload of a Star Destroyer rumbling over their heads when the next sequence began. Worried rebels, members of the Alderaanian security team ran past some talking robots. One was gold and seemed really uptight, and took somewhat defensive positions against an unknown threat. A door starts to burn, their faces get tense, and blasters are raised. Stormtroopers enter, the faceless bad guys, and the fight is on. Sometime later, fans would come to know and study, memorize, and brag about knowing that the blasters were E-11s, standard-issue Imperial weapons, and the overwhelmed rebels were wielding DH-17s, cool details that flesh out the world, but all that matters in that moment were the sounds the blasters made. It was familiar, but it was clearly from out of this world. It felt like science fiction, yet it wasn't hokey or over the top. It was metallic, yet part of it floated through the ether. It was immediately the sound you knew these space guns would make. Ben Burtt is a genius. By now, how Burtt made these sounds is the stuff of Star Wars behind-the-scenes lore. While on a family vacation, Burtt, who always traveled with his trusty Nagra recorder, climbed up a hill in the Pocono Mountains to reach an old radio tower. Striking a rock against the cable supporting the tower, he created the sound that would fuel the fire of many a playground Star Wars reenactment. According to his late father, Ben knew right away that it was how an imaginary laser gun ought to sound. Indeed it was. So, come for the dramatic tension, visual storytelling, and life-altering impact of the opening moments of A New Hope. But stay for the sound effect that became the universal signpost for a battle amongst the stars. Pew, pew, pew. $99. C-3PO returns. A golden droid, a red arm, and the comedy of character. Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. Writers, J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan and Michael Arndt. Director, J.J. Abrams. The Force Awakens was about returns just as much as debuts. The legacy of this film may well end up being all the new characters it brought to us, like Kylo Ren, Finn, Poe Dameron, and Rey, but there is no mistaking that part of what was being presented to fans in December 2015 was a few more rides around the space block with your old friends. The Force Awakens was chock-full of new glimpses of our lifelong heroes. Whether these first looks came at the very end, part of an emotional crescendo to the new story, or popped up along the way, it was nostalgic fun attending this reunion. Han Solo and the mighty Chewbacca had the most celebrated of these returns, more on this later, but the others kept pace, mostly. Luke Skywalker waited around on a hill in one of the most daring story beats of the movie. General Leia showed up with a knowing smirk at her husband in the middle of leading the resistance. Admiral Akbar was too busy planning to wink at the camera. R2-D2 was taking a nap, and Nine-Num, well, it was just nice knowing that our favorite Celestian was back. Yet one return of a classic character actually struck a chord, striking a pitch-perfect balance between the string-tugging nostalgia and staying true to the character. C-3PO was back. Episode 7 was really moving along by the time everyone's favorite high-strung protocol droid showed up. It was almost a surprise. The audience was investing more and more in the adventures of our new heroes, Rey and Finn, when suddenly General Leia and her resistance fighter show up. That itself is a great moment. The door to the resistance transport opens to reveal Leia, always a leader and not just a princess, she was now a general. The weight of the galaxy once again on her shoulders. Her expression is both weary and wry as her estranged husband stands before her. As fans, this is one of the moments we bought a ticket for. Leia and Han once again. Then, like he's done so many times before, most notably in the Millennium Falcon while it was resting not so comfortably in the belly of the Exogorth in The Empire Strikes Back, C-3PO interrupts. He's once again robbed Han Solo of a moment alone with Leia, and the moment earns its laughs. And C-3PO comedy is very much a reason to love Star Wars. There are a lot of great 3PO moments to revel in, and so much of that has to be chalked up to the masterful performance of Anthony Daniels. Humor in Star Wars has and always will be important, but the humor around C-3PO always seems to work best. It's the comedy of character. Similar to how Han Solo being Han created some of the fandom's favorite jokes, bits, and declarations of love, the character of 3PO constantly earns laughs by being, well, himself. The saga of Star Wars is fueled by serial adventure craziness. Something's always going wrong, something's blowing up, people are fighting, things are moving fast, and the opera and space opera is always moving forward. And in the middle of that is an anxiety-riddled droid just trying to hold on to one small piece of calm and adhere to his protocol programming. He just wants to do right by you, and for his princess. Yet Flummox 3PO is best 3PO, and time again, some of the biggest laughs in Star Wars circle around him. Does it always work? No, it doesn't. The 3PO cameo in Rogue One is fun, but it doesn't have time to breathe, and quite frankly, the comedy around him in Attack of the Clones veers way too far into wackiness and is a legendary stumbling block for fans looking to unilaterally love Star Wars. Even for Star Wars, a world in which giant space slugs rule criminal undergrounds and a pet dog inspired the best co-pilot in the galaxy, 3PO losing his head in the Petronaki arena on Geonosis didn't seem real. Which is why the grand return of C-3PO stands tall among his portfolio of laughs. He's excited to see Han Solo, despite the years of verbal jabs he's received from the crusty smuggler. Perhaps that's one of the added benefits of memory wipes. He has no ego, so he's not going to assume Han remembers him. And because he's polite, he's going to give you the out of blaming his new red arm and wants to make sure Leia knows it's him. It would never occur to C-3PO that any of these feelings or assumptions are wrong, especially against the backdrop of two reunited lovers standing amongst the rubble of a freshly destroyed castle burning because of their son and his band of evil soldiers. And we wouldn't want C-3PO, who is fluent in over 6 million forms of communication, any other way. 98. Punch it, Chewie. Han and Chewbacca's first jump into a larger journey. Solo, a Star Wars story. Writers, Lawrence Kasdan and John Kasdan. Director, Ron Howard. Solo, A Star Wars Story is a love story. Oh, yes, but it is also so much more. Solo is a high-rolling serial adventure that soars amongst the stars while diving deep into themes like survival and freedom. It challenges its characters and viewers to clear up what you personally define each one to be. There are a lot of layers to this tale of how one of the greatest characters of all time got his start and name, but make no mistake, this is a love story. The love story isn't about Han Solo and Kira. It's not about Han and his new crush, the Millennium Falcon. The tale of love told here is between Han Solo and Chewbacca. It's the beginning of their lifelong partnership and friendship, a connection that we know will pass the test of time. Han didn't know that at first, as he was too busy basing his entire life around the girl he thought got away, Kira, but it's definitely about him and Chewbacca. Even Kira has to tell him that at one point. Han and Chewie truly love each other. All of this feeds into one of the sweetest and most touching moments in the entire Star Wars saga, albeit quick and simple. The moment when two friends set off for a lifetime of adventures as Han and Chewie jump to lightspeed for the first time as captain and first mate. Han and Chewbacca's friendship was born out of circumstances beyond their control. They were literally chained together and have to work together to survive. Yet they are quickly forged together through the missions they are forced to take. Chewbacca has a chance to leave Han behind, but he decides to stay during the raid on Kessel after seeing Han's true nature and devotion to helping others. They're tribe mates now. As they fly out of Numidium Prime, Han, having just won the Falcon from Lando, the iconic duo has already been through a lot in a short amount of time, but a lot more is about to come their way. This moment is certainly served by the audience being fully aware of this. It plays on that knowledge. From meeting Luke and Obi-Wan in Mos Eisley's Chalmers Cantina to all the events of the Galactic Civil War and, yes, even Han's death, the audience has all of this burned into their souls by the time Han and Chewie are ready to make the jump. It's a tug on the nostalgia heartstrings for sure, but it's an earned tug. The levers click, the buttons tick, and Han even needs to flick a display to get it working. This is certainly the Millennium Falcon we all grew up daydreaming about. It's fast and chic, but you sometimes wonder if it's going to work at all, which is similar to the very dynamic of Han and Chewbacca. They're the best duo in the galaxy for sure, apologies to C-3PO and R2-D2, but you sometimes wonder how they work at all. And that is on display here as well, adding depth to a tiny moment. Han already has their next harebrained scheme in mind, and Chewie is dubious. Han asks when he's ever steered Chewbacca wrong. Chewie has several answers. However, he knows it won't matter. Han's smile means they're going on their next adventure. This is certainly the Han Solo and Chewbacca we all grew up rooting for. Everything we know and love about these characters is swimming around our brains. It's as if the whole saga is flying right before our eyes. There are moments in this movie where their adventures do begin in a literal sense, even a great moment when Chewbacca takes the co-pilot seat for the first time. Yet, as they both reach their hands up and start to make the jump to lightspeed, we know that everything before this moment was the prologue, the funny story at the bar about how they first met. Now, as the stars start to blur and fade into streaks, Han Solo, dirty scrum rat from the streets of Corellia, and Chewbacca, mighty son of the proud Wookiees of Kashyyyk, are not just jumping into lightspeed in the moment. They're becoming Han and Chewie forever. 97. Lock S foils into attack positions. The promotion of Wedge Antilles and the fun of Star Wars traditions. Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi. Writers, Lawrence Kasdan and George Lucas. Director, Richard Marquand. The plucky Rebel Alliance had their ragtag backs up against the wall as 30 snub fighters launched from their no-longer-hidden base on Yavin 4. Their target was the Death Star, and if they failed in this last-ditch mission, well, no more Rebels, pluck be damned. As the Rebellion's X-Wings and Y-Wings raced towards Death Star, grizzled pilot Garvin Dave Drace, he of the awe-inspiring Red Leader callsign, barked an order. Lock S foils into attack position. And it was the coolest thing ever. Yep, there's no need for any other fancy adjectives to describe it. It was just cool. The wings of the X-Wings opened up to, you know, form an X. What was happening? What are S-foils? Why do you need them to attack? What is happening? Rebel pilots and fans alike were tense. Fortunately, we all had Red Leader there to guide us through it all. After barking the S-foil's order, he steadied everyone as they passed through the Death Star's magnetic field and reminded them to put up their front deflector shields. The young, fresh-faced rebel pilots were pensive and weighed down by trepidation as opposed to the...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?